Blog Talk Radio.
There was a time I was so afraid, so scared to do what I wanted. In looking back, I can see all the mistakes that I made, and I wish that I could talk to me and tell me I can change. Don't be afraid, just walk with your head.
Hi, welcome to Blog Talk Radio, Safe Recovery. This is Monica Richardson, and I'm your host. Today is February 21st, 2012, and today we have, I think, a really exciting show. Let me just get this here. We have on, I'm going to bring her on in just a minute. I'm going to introduce her. Her name is Donna Cornett, and she is the founder and director of DrinkLink Moderate Drinking Programs, and her website is drinklinkmoderation.com, and she has written 4 books, 7 Weeks to Safe Social Drinking, Beat Binge Drinking for probably young people, and Moderate Drinking Naturally, and then she has another book, Moderate Drinking Made Easy Workbook. And I'm going to just bring her on. We can talk about it, but I'm most excited to hear about moderation and talking to young people. And so let me just bring Donna on. I think this is Donna.
Hi, Monica.
Hi. Yeah. Hi, Donna. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm really good. You know,
good.
Right around LA and getting back here to do this show with you that I'm really excited to do.
Great.
Yeah. So I am really passionate about educating everybody on the alternatives. I don't even want to call it that, but the other choices besides 12-step choices. And so when I heard you on Ken Anderson's show a couple weeks ago, I was very excited. And maybe, you know, I know a little more about you, but our listeners maybe are going to hear you for the first time. So how long have you been working on moderate drinking programs?
Oh, this started back in the early 80s. I was drinking too much. And I was in my early 30s, and I was drinking too much. And at that time, Monica, I started thinking there was a growing concern on my part, because I didn't have any alcohol-related problems, and I was very health-conscious. I worked out. I was very careful about my diet. You know, I was led a very healthy lifestyle, but I was finding that I was drinking one extra glass of wine every night. And I thought to myself, you know, this is not good. I don't want to do this. And I thought I was developing a problem. And I didn't want to have a problem with this because I worried about it. And it affected my attitude, you know. And so it bothered me. And at that time in the United States in the early 1980s, the only choices, as we know, were to stop altogether and join AA or continue drinking. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to jump in and say, that's when they agreed to pay. The beginning of treatment becoming a business became very big. So it was a huge push and a huge growth for 12-step, especially AA. NA wrote their book a few years later. So I could see that it was all or nothing. So, okay, did you wind up going to meetings?
I went to a couple of meetings because I thought, well, you know, let's check this out. I mean, this is my only thing that I have here, you know.
Right.
And so I went to a couple of meetings, and, you know, I have a master's degree in psychology, so I'm all for support groups and talking about your troubles and getting it off your chest and stuff like that.
Right.
And I went, and I thought it was, you know, it was a great thing. But I didn't know if I could really relate to it because, again, I didn't have any kind of serious problems and with alcohol. I was concerned about my alcohol consumption, but I wasn't having any health problems or relationship problems. Nobody ever told me, hey, you better settle down on the drinking or
right.
something like that. And so I thought to myself, you know, this is kind of overkill for me.
Right.
And I thought to myself, why can't I learn how to drink in a way that I could manage my drinking a little bit better and I could drink less and I would not have this problem instead of just, you know, saying I'm never going to have a drink for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed like overkill to me at that time.
Right, right, yeah. Especially that you were just drinking one extra glass.
I would have two or three glasses, and some nights I would have four glasses of wine, and I thought, this is not a healthy thing to do, long term especially. You know, you can develop health problems and have all kinds of problems.
Right.
And so I did go to a couple of AA meetings, and I'm an AA believer because I think some people really thrive in AA, and it's the only thing that will help them, you know. But I just didn't feel that passionate about it because, again, the problem wasn't that serious. And when you consider, well, looking back on it, when you consider that in this country, that all the emphasis practically goes to alcoholics and stopping drinking and never drink again, and the real problem lies with problem drinkers in this country, which are who are different from alcoholics,
and
problem drinkers outnumber alcoholics 4-1 in this country. I think the emphasis should be on targeting the problem drinkers. Problem drinkers are people who can still do something about their drinking. You know, they're not experiencing super serious problems yet, but they have a problem, you know, and so I think
the
focus should be on problem drinkers who we can still get to in time before they have to live through years of alcohol abuse, you know, and all the problems associated with alcohol abuse for years and years and years before they finally graduate to alcoholism and have to stop drinking altogether.
Right, right. But you know what they're doing right now? I mean, even when I think about myself, although I stopped because I wanted to stop, and I actually wanted to stop completely when I did. I was very young. But they're labeling young people as alcoholics and addicts when they're not, and there's a lot of that going on. And even in all this work since I've been doing these shows, it's sort of been I've been sort of evolving as I left AA last spring, thinking about people trying to convince me as I stayed sober and my life was getting worse in AA because I was being sexually preyed on, that looking back, you know, 30-something years, that they would say, well, you know, did you ever have blackouts? And I said, well, yeah. And they said, you see, those are the later stages of alcoholism. And so even though, you know, you wanted to stop on your own, Monica, and you did, you have alcoholism. And I was like, really? And I would get more depressed. And so, you know, I've never heard anybody put it this way that you just did, that we have problem drinkers. And so I want to tell everybody we're talking to Donna Cornett, and she has a website called drinklinkmoderation.com. You can call her. You can call in. We're going to talk for a little while longer, maybe 10 or 15 minutes, and then we're going to take calls. And the number to call in for us today, right now, to speak to Donna and myself would be 818-475-9211, 818-475-9211. So now, how did you go from you know, you go into these meetings and you realize you didn't fit, to writing these wonderful books and creating a program. What was the next step 20-something years ago that you took?
I kind of explored my options here, and that didn't take long because it was AA and stop drinking. And I had a fortuitous meeting. I was in Europe, and I was in London, and at this time when I was concerned about my drinking and kind of exploring, you know, what could I do?
Mm-hmm.
And I have a master's degree in psychology, and so I thought, wow, this is a really important area that if somebody could teach drinkers how to drink responsibly instead of just throwing a beer at them when they're 16 years old and say, kid, go at it, without any kind of guidance, you know.
Right.
And so young people's drinking is left up to chance, and then they get into all kinds of problems.
Right.
I had a fortuitous meeting in London with this fellow who was the director of a moderate drinking program in London.
Back in the 80s?
Back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
It is no longer in operation. It is now defunct. But I was astonished that there was such a thing.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
A moderate drinking program.
Right, right.
And so it was just like serendipity. I mean, you know, here I was searching for my answer, the answer to my drinking problem or issue or whatever you want to call it. And I meet this guy. I happen to meet this guy who is the director of the Moderate Drinking Program in London. And so I talked to him for a while, and I thought, this is really interesting. And then when I got back home, I started looking into it, and I discovered that not only England had moderate drinking programs, but several other countries did too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an acceptable alternative over in Europe, versus the United States, where it was not an acceptable alternative. You were crazy if you thought, you know, anybody who had... In this country, it is considered anybody who has a drinking problem, in quotes, must be an alcoholic.
Mm.
And to classify anyone with a drinking problem as an alcoholic is just a huge mistake, I think.
You're just
putting
a box. We're going to change that, Donna. We're going to change that. You
I
and me and
so.
A coalition of... Other people, yeah. I mean, I think it's terrible to lay it on young people, and even laying it on someone who might get pulled over the first time. And we see that it doesn't work. So I agree. I think that it was fortuitous, or whatever the word is, for you and I to meet and to maybe work together.
Yeah.
I just took my first ad out for Smart Recovery to promote, you know, that kind of empowered, you know, approach through a high school, you know, and I just took an ad out, and Mark gave me some stuff. And I think that together we want to just just change this kind of thinking. It's really like 1950s, never mind 1930s, you know, it's really bizarre.
I think that this is a really good word that you use. We want to empower people. We don't want to make them feel like hopeless victims.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is one thing that I didn't care for when I went to AA.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to feel like a hopeless victim.
Right.
You know, I don't like this.
This didn't feel good
to me. And so what happened, I came back home here, and this moderate drinking program over in England was just a very basic thing. They just handed out a little pamphlet that said, well, pace your drinking and watch your portions. It was a very basic, you know, sort of thing. But when I got back home here, I do have a master's degree in psychology, so I'm into behavior change and how to change behavior. So I just really fleshed it out, and so I took some basic guidelines from them, and I developed this 7-week program about how to manage your drinking better, so you wouldn't have these problems, so you wouldn't graduate to alcoholism. That's how the program came about, and that's how all the books came about too.
So which, okay, maybe we could start with, I could see how we could probably have you on two times. You know, maybe we can't cover it all today, which I would gladly.
There's a lot.
Well, yeah, they gladly do. And if you were to say, so the first, I'm going to just tell everybody who just, there's people in the chat room, so there's people in there. I'm going to just say hi to some of the chatters. There's Gunther, there's Persephone, there's Sal, there's Sue, and Amy Lee Coy just jumped in. Hi there, everybody. Amy Lee Coy has a book, From Death Do I Part, and she was in and out for 20 years and finally developed a sort of self-caring, loving way to heal, and
mm-hmm.
is, and you know, chose abstinence, and is, and she's become a good friend of mine. We have another blogger, Gunther, who I got to know really well, who sort of designed his own plan after being in and out of AA for 18 years, never having more than 6 months of, you know, abstinence put together, and now celebrated 5 years. And the rest are all ex-AAers in there. Hi, everybody. So we're listening to Donna Cornett. And she has developed this program, DrinkLinkModeration.com, and it's about the 7 weeks to safe social drinking. And I think that as a parent who, myself, I have a 21-year-old, a 17-year-old, that this really could help parents to not lay the AA trip on their kid, which, unfortunately, I did to my first son, and it was bad. And then luckily for me, you know, the blinders got peeled off and the pink sunglasses got taken away, and I got to see AA for what it was and started to change the words that I used in my belief system by reading Stanton Peale's book, How to Addiction Proof Your Child, and all the books that, in fact, these bloggers, The Truth About Addiction and Recovery, and Albert Ellis's book. And so I'm really excited to, you know, see what you have and see what you have to offer in a very personal way, you know. And now my son is actually doing really well and drinking really moderately, proving the AA lie is a lie.
Yeah, I think to introduce AA concepts to kids that are so young, I don't know how well it would work, you know. That's why I wrote Beat Binge Drinking, which is aimed at a young audience, because I looked around and all of the books that were written are written about binge drinking and teenagers, which is a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
They're all written for an audience of for parents and for teachers and for treatment professionals who treat kids, you know, for alcohol problems.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't one book that talked to the teenager or the young person directly and said, "I'm talking to you, and
mm-hmm.
I get you." And I
mm-hmm.
get you, you know,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
I know that you feel very adventuresome at this time in your life,
right?
And you're into experimentation at this time
mm-hmm.
in your life, and
mm-hmm.
so we kind of go with that flow, because I try to get into the mentality of what a young person thinks like. I remembered way back when,
I talked
to a lot of young people too, so it's. You know, I just wanted to get their mindset and really introduce some of the things that, you know, that I've been talking about for years and put it into an approach that they could appreciate and understand and dig.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm gonna get your books. I want to get the Beat Binge Drinking, because I'm going to do some outreach work with a high school locally. And I think I bought Ken Anderson's book, too, because it's a harm reduction book, and then the 7 weeks to save social drinking. So from what I know, there are many people on the blogs that wound up in, you know, Orange Papers and Stinkin' Thinkin', and now mine, you know, Leaving AA, and there's Expose AA, and all these actually ex-steppers that are out there blogging. And what I have found is there are a number of people, a couple of them are young, that when they leave AA, decide that they are going to drink, that they're going, like, is this really true, you know, what they said, and are successfully have a plan, and they've shared it on the blogs, this moderation. So if you could encapsulate, you know, your program, what would you say the first step if somebody comes to you, what would you say to them?
As far a young person or an ex-AA-er or whom?
Either one.
Either one.
Well, the people that we're dealing with are actually ex-AA members. So someone who went to AA, hated it, and is young, and, yeah, and they're there on your site or in, you know, what's the
they're,
first step in your book?
They're interested, yeah.
Yeah, they're interested. Mm-hmm.
Well, the first thing that I'm very upfront, and I say, let's talk about the issues you had when you were drinking heavily that you went to AA initially for,
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
you were so concerned that you went to AA. And we talk about the problems that they were having. And if they were really serious problems, like life-threatening problems,
right,
or like health problems, or and really serious problems, serious legal problems, or something like that, I say to them, you know, well, you know, do you think your life is going to improve if you start drinking again?
Right.
So I want to get that off my chest right away because it's important. I never want to encourage moderate drinking for somebody who has such serious drinking problems that it's either going to kill them or that it's going to kill somebody else. So we get that issue off the table immediately. And then if they say, you know, and I also say, but if you know that you're going to drink again, no matter what, you know,
right.
if you know that you're going to drink again, then you might try a moderate drinking program,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I turn away no one because I've talked to so many different people and so many different success stories have
mm-hmm.
happened, you know, and a lot of it boils down to a person's motivation about
right.
how badly they want this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I never discount anyone. I never turn away anyone. And I like to be totally realistic with a person who calls me and says, you know, I'm thinking about, I've been in AA for 5 or 10 years and I'm thinking about drinking again. And so I talk to them about, you know, what led them to AA and why they think moderate drinking would be why they're considering it right now. And then we go over what I do in the program and how the program works, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to just tell all the people who are listening that there is a free, no-obligation, 15-minute phone coaching session. It looks like it's a $50 value. Your program seems very affordable. It doesn't. I didn't see any $26,000 a month.
Not here. Not here.
No.
Yeah, I try to keep it affordable, you know, and because I want to reach as many people as I possibly can.
So
and if
oh, I'm sorry.
Go.
Yeah. You were saying we have a chatter that is asking you a question.
Uh-huh.
Just where do you live and work?
I live in the beautiful wine country in Northern California.
Okay, so she is in Northern California.
I live in Sonoma County in California, surrounded by vineyards and lots of wine tasting places.
It's so funny. So, okay, let's see. Is there a certain type of person who you would not consider? Wait. Gunther is asking, is there a certain type of person who you would consider to not be a good candidate for moderation?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There are people that call me, and in fact, a fellow not too long ago called me. He had had serious blackout. He was in his... he had been drinking all of his life. He was middle-aged. He had serious blackouts. He had serious health problems.
Right.
His wife was on the verge of divorce. He was estranged from his family, his daughters, because of his drinking. And he said, to me, I'll always remember this. He said to me, "I don't know why they want me to stop drinking."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
yeah.
I said, "I don't think it's too pleasant to be around somebody who is they had to go and he had been hospitalized several times within the last year because of his drinking, you know, and he had had DUIs, and so you know, even though I may not come out and say it in plain English, you know, I say, you know, I don't know if this is the right thing for you to do, and I will go with the flow and hopefully the person will understand that maybe this isn't such a good idea, you know.
Right.
And I give them time to think on it too, saying, is this the really the right way to go for you, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want to kill anybody with a moderate drinking program, that's for sure.
No, I think that I was interviewed by a woman who is writing a book about women and drinking in the United States, and you know, she was talking to women that, in fact, I think that she, I'm going to call her and tell her about you, but where women are just starting to drink too much wine at night. Like, she talked about this certain type of woman that was not ever going to go to AA. They were not. They were these really rich, you know, women that were in these big homes, and they had, a lot of money, and they're finding themselves drinking too much wine, like drinking the whole bottle and going, gee, like, what am I doing? And then the family's like, oh, you know, they just watched some show. You know, Hollywood loves to promote 12-step and act like it's the only, you know, hot dog stand on the block for the next 50 miles. And, you know, it isn't. And they're like, then the family's like, well, you're an alcoholic. Like, I was just thinking about, I think it's called Criminal Minds. And, you know, I was loving the show, and I'm watching the show, and I thought to myself, you know, these shows don't even show anybody getting drunk. These shows show women in suits in high places, and the reason I thought about it, I was watching another show called Portlandia, and a guy was getting drunk. Like, he was actually playing drunk, and he was drinking with this old woman, and, you know, they had, like, 8 or 10 beers, and I thought, why is this so funny and so odd? And I thought, you know, that episode of Criminal Minds, they did this intervention with a woman who we never saw drink. You know, so they are. Yeah, so they're depicting an alcoholic to be this high. Who do they want to reach and why? Like, okay, so maybe she is drinking too much wine and maybe she is hiding it in her filing cabinet. But is AA going to help her? You know, and so I know I went off on a long tangent, but I think it all matters, because if the media and our entertainment is saying, this is an alcoholic, I mean, they're not even leading up to it. I don't even see any drinking, even in the character's development.
I think especially when it comes to women. I think women are rarely portrayed in as having drinking problems, very rarely, and I don't know, maybe it's so deeply ingrained that a woman who drinks too much is a slut and she's got to be an alcoholic, and she's a bad mother, and she, you know, she can't cook.
she burns the spaghetti sauce.
A woman who has a problem with alcohol is so much worse than in this society than a man who has a problem with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just fascinating to me, because I am writing a book about women and women's drinking and adapting the program for women, because women drink for different reasons. They have different drinking patterns than men. They drink on play dates, and they drink on game nights, and they drink after the kids are in bed. You know, and it's much different than men. And so it's a really interesting question, and how they're portrayed in the media is there. You just wouldn't, you would never imagine that women have drinking problems.
Yeah, we my grandma drank in the kitchen. She was a great cook, though. She was an excellent cook, but she was a kitchen drinker. Now we have a question here from a blogger, Sal. Now, Sal, do you have a degree also in? Tell me what your degrees are in. I think he even worked in treatment, but he's asking you: does Ms. Carnett believe that AA and the discipline of evidence-based psychotherapy often work at cross purposes?
At cross purposes. What does mean? I don't understand what cross purposes.
Sal, do you mean that it doesn't work? Are you asking if? No, I'm sorry. I know him. We've actually spoken on the phone. He's called in many times. So let's see. Question from Amy Lee says, Donna fully supports AA for some people because she said it's the only thing that will help them. Why does she think that is true? Oh, there's another question coming in. Well, let's go back to Sal's question and see if, Sal, can you either call in at 818-475-9211 and ask the question, 818-475-9211, or can you restate it? Let me see. Does believe that AA and the discipline of evidence-based psychotherapy so often work like they go against each other? Is that what you're meaning, Sal?
Well, I know that, yes, I do realize that the AA approach does not condone, or they don't think it's a good idea for one to be in psychotherapy when you're in AA, because basically we don't want to delve into the past and blame our poor drinking habits on what happened to us when we were two, you know.
So I
understand that. By the way, an interesting point here is the most successful research has shown that the most successful candidate for AA is the white middle-aged male.
Mm-hmm.
They are the people that the AA philosophy clicks with the most, and they're the most successful ones in stopping drinking with AA.
Well, I want to say, though, that the two, you know, people close to me, one being my father and my stepdad, who would fit that, both hated AA. My dad read the book and really could have used, because he was more of a, what did they call it when people were didn't drink all the time, so they were, oh, man, that was
kind of
name.
A binge drinker?
Well, no, there was another name for a periodic. They called it a periodic. And my stepfather, which was definitely a daily hard drinker, hated the whole sitting in groups and talking about their feelings.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he was even a generation older than my dad. But we do have some callers. So let's see. Let's take a call. Would you like to take
sure.
a question? Okay, let's take a question. So, hi, caller. Can I have your name, please?
Hi, this is Sal. Am I on the air?
Hey, Sal, you're on the air live with myself and Donna. How you doing?
Great. It's been a while. Hi, Monica. Hi, Ms. Cornett. It's a pleasure.
Hi.
Hi. So can you rephrase your question for
her? Sure.
Because we wanted to ask.
When I say this, my background, I have a master's in social work, LMSW, and I was a substance abuse counselor at one time in New York State. And basically, it seems the evidence-based practice of psychotherapists, which is ongoing and progressive and incorporates new information constantly, as opposed to the 12-step approach, which is not as a social worker. One of the core values in social work is valuing the client or the person and empowering that individual in the importance of human relationships. And the 12-step program, as you pointed out, is completely the antithesis of that, stating that you're powerless and you must submit to a higher power and or the group. And in most states, AA has been designated as a religion. So you have, like in New York State, we have two governing bodies that oversee psychotherapy and the licensing and of practitioners and in clinics, and then you have another governing body which licenses practitioners and facilities that treat substance abuse. And it seems to me that the discipline of psychotherapy is really abdicated responsibility for substance abusers, as though they've almost been ghettoized.
Yes. I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. And it's just, I think anyone, any kind of addiction these days, you know, we bow to the addiction. It takes precedence over law, the legal system. It takes precedence over everything. And this person has an addiction, so you know they're not held accountable for any of their actions. You know, I think
that's bad, and they're doing it with sex now. I think this whole thing that's happened with some of our politicians and sex and calling it an addiction is infuriating. I mean, it's really bad. Like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that it's a phase we must be going through. I hope so. We'll get over it.
Val, thank you for calling in. Do you have another
question?
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
I have another caller. Okay, I'll put you on, I guess, back on hold. Okay. Thank you. All right. Let's see. We have another caller. Let's see who's here. Hi, caller. Can I have your first name, please?
Hello. My name is Sid. Sydney?
Oh, hi, Sydney. How you doing?
Fine. Yes, I was listening to the conversation, and I've worked with many counselors, and from researching it for over a decade, alcohol is just like in the chat room. It's used as a form of social control. I mean, I notice when people try to kick it, it's like trying to kick a drug that's advertised everywhere. And there's practically no social event at nighttime that doesn't have alcohol there. It always rears its head, and it's like a fantasy, a fake concern. Not everyone, but the majority have trying to cure it because it comes from the societal acceptance. People think it's okay to have this drug, which is so deadly, and so, you know, the people that only own it, that have so much money, they don't even call it a drug. They say drug and alcohol. Well, wait a second. From my research, the only drug that I found that when a person takes, they get violent on the drug, so the drug's effect can make them violent, is alcohol. Crack addicts, cocaine, heroin addicts that I've talked to, they'll get violent to get the money to get the drug. But once they're in the euphoric state of the drug, they are not violent at all. I mean, you can see this clearly with marijuana as well. Alcohol is the only drug. I mean, you can argue with PCP a little. It goes back and back. But alcohol, the proof, it's not me saying this, it's the proof. You can look at it, and it is perpetuated because it keeps people in fear of the raging alcoholics and saying, we need you to protect us. We need more laws. But never a law to tightly restrict alcohol. Never that law.
Do you have a question for Donna about moderation?
Moderation of alcohol?
Yeah, because
moderation of drinking alcohol.
Yeah, of people who want to drink moderately rather than the, you know, it's all or nothing, which is definitely.
There is no moderation. I tell people either you drink or you don't. So if you can drink a glass of wine a month, or you can be an alcoholic, you still drink alcohol. You can drink a glass of wine only on Christmas,
yeah,
but you still drink.
Let me ask you this. Okay, I want to ask Sid a question. Sid, are you against any kind of alcohol consumption?
No, I'm definitely not against that.
Uh-huh.
What I'm against is a lying government and a lying establishment that tries to hide a deadly drug as if it's not. Now, all drugs, I do believe, should be legal, but it should be under close scrutiny. When you see the problem, then you're going to have to pull back on it. You're going to have to do – actually, alcohol, when you see the problems of it, people would be like, this cannot be legal. I'm not for making it illegal because I think that will, you know, make it sell more. Education about it. and giving people a choice. Look at what this has done to this man. He's homeless. He'll buy a bottle before he buys food. Okay, kids, we'll learn about this. Okay, people. And then people will say, you know what, why would I ever want to drink that? But to make it socially acceptable on one side and then say, okay, you got to quit it on the other side, these people who are on alcohol are confused.
Donna, were you going to jump in and say, hold on a second.
Can we smoke a little crack?
Sid, hold on a second. Donna, you want to say something?
Number one, I think you're right. It's socially acceptable. It's legal. It's convenient. It's easy to get. And if you use it correctly, it's not harmful to you. But I think you also have to realize that the alcohol lobby in this country is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that anyone is ever going to entertain stricter laws on alcohol because of the lobbyists in Washington would be working overtime. You know, it just would not happen. Because there is so much money wrapped up in alcohol in this country.
Well, it's more than money. It's control. You control a person's life, and all of you being counselors and seeing the people's effect on it, you see it. It grips their soul, or whatever you want to call it.
Well,
I'm not religious.
You know, you're talking about an extreme case here, and my mission.
You're never
an
alcoholic until you mess up. You can drink as much as you want. You do your job functionally in society. You're not a problem.
Sid, I'm going to thank you for calling in. I have a couple more callers I'm going to take. Thank you. Okay, so we have another caller on the line.
Sure.
I want to see who's calling in. Thanks. Hold on a second. Hi, caller.
Hi, Monica.
Yes, who's this?
This is Patsy.
Patsy, how you doing there? Are you calling into the show? Do you want to ask a question or you want to just listen?
No, I was listening. I wanted to ask her a question because she seems to think that that you can have moderation. But
yes.
I feel that in your family, like if you have the disease, it's going to go down the line unless you completely stop the alcohol or the drug use or anything. I'm not sure that the person that has it, the genetic, I think it goes by genetics about alcoholism. And I don't feel that if... you drink moderately, that you can get away with doing that if you know what I'm saying? I don't know if I'm coming across that correctly.
Yeah, Donna, you want to address it? This is a childhood friend of mine. It's so nice to hear from you. So, Donna, can you answer, and then I'd like to say something, too. So,
yeah. Well, you know, this is one of the first questions that I ask a person. I ask them what if they think that there is a genetic predisposition in their family when it comes to alcohol abuse. And that is usually two or more close people in your family, close relatives in your family. If they have drinking problems, then that might indicate a genetic predisposition. And what I say to them, I say that you might have a genetic predisposition for alcoholism here. And I'm so glad that you called. And I'm so glad that you want to do something about your drinking before it becomes a problem. Most people don't realize that most alcoholics do not happen overnight. It takes years to become an alcoholic for most people.
I agree. I'm 10 years clean or more, but I have an 18-year-old daughter who totally is against drinking whatsoever, which I'm thankful for, because she sees what happens in the family or her friends that have gone down the bad road. And I always say, you know, you can have a drink or two, but she says, Mom, why? I don't like it. I don't want to do it. So it's like, thank God I'm not passing it down the line. That's what I'm just saying.
Well,
I wish I could drink moderately, but I just can't.
any young person who does not want to drink, I am fully behind that decision. You know, I never encourage anyone to start drinking I don't encourage people who have a genetic predisposition. Especially if they're suffering from really serious problems because of alcohol, it would not be responsible for me to do.
Patsy, I'm glad that she decided not to.
There is something Amy Lee Coy wrote in the chat room: genetics do not control our hand-to-mouth movement. And, you know, a lot like you, Patsy, I was told by some people, like therapists, that this was genetic. And I don't think so. It's like my sons have the genetics for me to play music and sing, but they're not going to take that. Like, they have the gene that they could sing if they want, but maybe they're not going to be a singer and they're not going to pursue music. They're going to pursue science and politics or social change, even though genetically they have my genes, which says, you know, you could sing and you could have the ability to play an instrument. And this is the way Stanton Peale has explained it to me, that the disease concept, even AA didn't call it a disease. They called it a disease when they wanted the insurance companies and the government to pay for rehab and treatment, which became a billion-dollar industry. So my son, who was drinking kind of out of control, when I changed my attitude, and stopped believing the hogwash or whatever hogwash that AA had taught me and read all these other books and said, it is up to you. You are making a choice. You don't have a disease. It's bullshit. And so you either choose drinking and drinking or your family, and you actually need to read some books on moderation. And I didn't even know about, you know, Donna yet, and I just started to be told about Kenneth, but I was talking like to Gunther and other people and reading these other books. And I think if you already know you don't want to drink, and you say, well, I've seen what happened to Grandpa, you know, or my dad, right, who became homeless and lost everything, that fear is there. But my father was also not ever given a choice. My father was not given maybe an antidepressant or some pill that would have helped him, because turned out he did have a mental illness.
Right.
Yeah, you know, developing a drinking problem and alcoholism is most often a complex interaction of internal and external factors, and we can count maybe a genetic predisposition for alcoholism as just one factor, you know. And you do have a choice. Mm-hmm. What I tell people that do come from a family where alcohol abuse is obvious, this is a good time for you to call, and this is a very good thing for you to be extra vigilant about, because it runs in your family.
That's right.
And so you have to be extra careful.
When I drank, I'll tell you, I loved it. I mean, I would drink and drink, and I really, really loved it, and that's one thing I miss. I miss it wholeheartedly, but I choose not to do it because I don't want to go down that road. But that's my choice, you know.
You know,
I would call in and say hi, and I'm watching this.
Oh, it's so nice to hear from you.
I'm putting my voice, my opinion, talking on it, so I had to call you. All right,
I'm glad. Thank you, Patsy, for calling. I love you.
Good luck, and take care.
Okay, bye, sweetie. Oh, that's your childhood friend who I did drink with. We drank beer together and got drunk together in Inwood Park, but we have another caller on the line. So first, I want to tell everybody again who we're talking to, and I'm so happy to have Donna Cornett with us on the line. I think I'd like to have you back again. She has written four books, 7 Weeks to Safe Social Drinking, Beat Binge Drinking, Moderate Drinking Naturally is another book, and Moderate Drinking Made Easy Workbook. And you can reach her at 1-888-777-DRINK. But the easiest thing, I do love your website, and it's called drinklinkmoderation.com. And so we are here taking calls and talking about, you know, moderation. It's not everybody doesn't need black and white and never drink forever. And here we have another caller on the line. Hi, caller.
Hello, Monica. It's Kevin.
Hey, do you want to just listen, Kev, or do you have a question or something you want to say to Donna? This is my husband, Kevin, Donna.
Oh!
Hello. I just came in late. No, I just love to listen.
Oh, okay. So we'll put you back on hold, sweetie, okay?
Okay,
then. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that I think everybody has to figure out their own path. You know, I teach moderation for people who want to moderate their drinking. If they want to stop drinking, that's fine with me. You know, whatever works for you, as long as you do it. I have seen the effects of alcoholism firsthand. My sister died a year and a half ago of alcoholism. She died of pancreatitis and cirrhosis of the liver, and it was a long, excruciating death.
Wow.
And so I have no qualms. I have no qualms with abstinence. I've seen the devastation of alcoholism firsthand.
Right.
So, I'm not pushing out moderation on anyone.
Right. Wow. I am so sorry. My father died in 08, you know, the same thing. But let me ask you, so with you, with your sister and with your knowledge of, moderation, did she ever want help or try to get help, or did she never want help and never get it?
She never wanted help.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you offered her help, she would be more rebellious than ever.
Mm-hmm.
And drink and drug more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings me to an interesting point about why women behave this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized in researching for my new book that women drink for totally different reasons. Well, a lot of different reasons than men. And one factor why women who really get into alcohol and drugs is that many women who go this route have some kind of childhood traumatic experience.
Often
sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, don't you think the men, like I know a lot of guys that are in program and where program hasn't worked, that had childhood abuse, both sexual and physical violence in the home, and they later in life, whether they became it at teenagers or in their 20s, started to really act out with drugs and alcohol sort of to numb the pain. Somebody wrote here, though, there's a question here that I think Gunther wrote, environment could be a factor. So he's a male blogger that I know. How does one know if they are a good candidate for moderation? Is there some type of criteria or test that you can give yourself?
Well, actually, I kind of follow the American Psychological Association criteria for alcohol abuse versus alcoholism. And alcohol abuse is basically you're not having too many problems. You're not having health problems.
Mm-hmm.
You may be worried about your drinking like I was. In fact, if you bear with me 1 minute, I can tell you exactly what the criteria is, line per line, because it is in seven weeks to Safe Social Drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And the American Psychiatric Association criteria for problem drinking or alcohol abuse is
right.
A maladaptive pattern of substance use drinking leading to clinically significant impairment or stress as manifested by one or more of the following symptoms occurring within a 12-month period. And one symptom is recurrent alcohol use, resulting in a failure to fulfill major obligations at work, school, home, missing work, missing school, not doing things that you should be doing at home.
Right.
A second symptom is recurrent alcohol use in situations in which it is physically hazardous to drink, like drinking and driving or operating machinery when you're impaired by alcohol.
Yeah, really, operating heavy machinery.
That might be a bad thing.
That might be a really bad thing, right.
And a third symptom would be recurrent alcohol-related legal problems, DUIs, stuff like that. And the fourth symptom would be continued alcohol use, despite having persistent or recurrent social or interpersonal problems caused by or exacerbated by the effects of alcohol, arguments with your friends or your partner, or relationship problems with kids, stuff like that. So if you have one or more of these symptoms, then you would probably be considered an alcoholic or an alcohol abuser or a problem drinker. Versus if the criteria for alcohol dependence or alcoholism is a maladaptive pattern of substance use leading to clinically significant impairment or distress as manifested by three or more of the following at any time in a 12-month period. And basically, there are many of the same symptoms that we talked about for alcohol, for problem drinking. Only if you have three of these symptoms, then you're probably an alcoholic. Three or more symptoms. One of them is tolerance, which is you need more alcohol to get high.
Mm-hmm.
Two is withdrawal. When you don't drink, you have physical problems, tremors, sweating, nausea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Three, alcohol is often taken in larger amounts or over a longer period period than you intend. Four is a persistent desire or unsuccessful efforts to cut down or control alcohol use.
Mm.
Five, a great deal of time is spent in activities necessary to obtaining alcohol or recovering from its effects, like a hangover.
Right.
Six is important social, occupational, or recreational activities are given up or reduced because you'd rather drink instead.
Mm-hmm.
Seven is alcohol use is continued despite having a persistent or recurrent physical or psychological problem that is likely to have been caused or exacerbated by alcohol.
Right. I think you answered it for Gunther. It's just kind of repeating what you're saying here by saying, and if you want, I'll read it to you, so what he wrote in the chat room. So someone who is alcohol dependent should not try moderation. Someone who just abuses alcohol may want to consider moderation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I take on problem drinkers. Alcoholics it's just much more serious, and moderation, that's my gig.
I think we have about 3.5 minutes left. I really want to thank you so much for being on my show. Again, we're talking to Donna Cornett, who is the founder and director of DrinkLink Moderate Drinking Programs, a very, very affordable program. You could call her for a free, no-obligation, 15-minute phone coaching session. I think it must be really sad for, like, pilots and doctors and, like, if they just get one DUI, getting sentenced. I heard that nurses get sentenced for 5 years to meetings. It's really gotten... Everybody is not an alcoholic who gets one DUI.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just...
And I think my main message, Monica, is as soon as you think that you might be having a problem with alcohol, start doing something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't sit around and wait and fret and continue drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as soon as you think that there's a problem, you start proactively going out and looking into options that will help you to figure out why you're drinking too much and to help you manage your drinking better.
Mm, I wanted to, they're thanking you in the chat room. I really, really appreciate it. I think all of us know somebody who probably isn't an alcoholic, who is in AA, just getting the word out. I think that it's really empowering what you're doing. And the books look beautiful. I'm going to order them, and we'll have you on again. So, again, everybody, I want to thank you. We're going to talk to Dennis, a blogger from Orange Papers, who grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. He's going to tell his story. He wrote it. He's going to be my guest, and I'm going to maybe get one or two more. And I look forward to you and I talking again, Donna.
Yes.
I want to thank everybody for joining us in the chat room. Again, you can get her book, I think, on Amazon. Is it on Amazon?
They're all on Amazon.
Everywhere. So it's really Donna Cornett. And I want to thank all the callers in, everybody who called in, and we will see you again next week. Okay, good night.
Thank you, Monica.
Thanks so much, Donna. Thanks, everyone, for calling
in. Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.